Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, it's the Mac Show. We're slightly depleted numbers this week, and Jeff has manfully stepped in to help us out on the numbers, otherwise it would have been just us chickens. We've had a bit of a swathe of dropouts today on the Mac Show. Don cried off yesterday afternoon because he's got tons to do to get a Screencast Online project out. Which happens occasionally. And Will's dropped out with man flu this morning. Carl is supposed to be here, but he's stuck on the M25 at the moment, so he may join us in a bit whenever what time he gets back. So would people have been dropping like flies, and Carl Swagger's working for the next couple of months doing an MBA thing. So it's just us three to discuss the week's Mac news, but it won't detract from the fact that we've got a fantastic show lined up for you. Top right, Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing good. And again, since I did hop in at the last minute, for everyone that's playing along at home, there's no guarantee that there's anything else on below this shirt.
Yeah.
So, just keep that in mind during the recording.
Yeah. Any TSA officers are out there that are getting excited at the moment?
Yeah. If there's any TSA officers out there, call me.
beneath him, it's Kelly. And actually, if you've got nothing on below that point, Kelly, I wouldn't look up if I were you, girl.
I am.
Oh, no, go ahead, Kelly. It's a party now. Keyboard.
The yeah. last chicken at the shop will be staring down with a big brown eye. you'd probably only get that if you're English. Right. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing well. I'm glad we were able to finally put something together this morning. So
this morning. Yeah. God, it's nearly afternoon where you are probably by the time we've started this. Christ. And actually, this week, finally, with lip sync, Dr. Happy Mac. Manful father of...
living in real time.
Who's gone and collected the kids to look after his sick wife who's in bed, and he's still here on the show. Greeny, are you listening?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's proper commitment.
I rock.
You do, mate.
Except.
And before we do the week in Mac, we've had a few reviews. We're going to cover the globe today because I've had a trot round a few of the stores. And starting off in Blighty, Ad Furlough says, always looking forward to this podcast and try and watch live when I can. I must say, Will Green has really grown on me in the past year and makes me laugh. He's a funny guy. I'd like to meet him one day. He's unusual. Top bloke, Dr. Happy Mac, used his services lately. And Don Screencaster, a great service. Keep up the great work. Thank you. If you'd like to meet him, come to the bash. If you're in Blighty, mate, everyone can get to the bash. It's on July the 6th, and it should be a fantastic deal. We sold a few tickets this week, which is nice. Steve in Texas, so that's from the US store, is the next one. I really enjoy the way this podcast has guests from all over the globe. I'm an American, and the British are great, although I have to listen very hard at times to keep up. A good mix of humour and Mac information. Nobody's afraid to disagree with one another most of the time and keep up the good work. This is from the German store. Revo says, subscribe to this podcast, you must. I didn't know that Yoda was German. Subscribe to this podcast,
you must. Couldn't you tell by the way he forms his sentences?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good, because that is German. That's why he's written that. So that's a Google translation right there. Also, Eric Tech has written, the Mac-centric show to listen to, period. If you see people in public transport with a wide grin wearing earphones, the chances are that Will Green is on the show as well. I went to the French store, but we haven't got any reviews in there. I couldn't figure that out. In the Irish store, Aliomi says, really great show, the best podcast ever. Even if they aren't current at 100% of the time. And he's an Apple senior advisor. I figure that Ireland hasn't got a great deal of Apple stores, so that may actually kind of limit you, run you, you know, kind of zone down as to who you are. The Apple police may be knocking at your door with the testicle clamps. And Mike...
current?
We are current. I think we're there. Yeah. Maybe not when we're talking about HyperCard. And Mike Cabby has said, this is a great podcast. The boy can be funny at times and full of info. Keep it up. Great job. I don't know who the boy is, but thank you, Mike. That's very kind. He's from the Irish store as well. If you've got a review, put it in iTunes. Tell me that you put it in iTunes if you're in one of the foreign stores, because I have to physically go and sign in, change locations But let me know that you sent us a review, and I'll gladly go and read it out. We love our reviews. They do a wonderful job in keeping us a little bit higher up in iTunes, so please give us them if you can. I'd like to get 100 by the time we hit to the bash. It's not that many to go, so we'll be fine. Right, the week in Apple News. Big Ron. I don't suppose this is Apple News anymore, really, I suppose. It's just the fact that he was Ron, and as Ron got a certain amount of kudos. Ron Johnson, the guy that started the stores, has been ousted as CEO of JCPenney. The two questions, really, to tie this back into Apple. The first thing is, he probably got a bit of a hospital ball because this wasn't the kind of business that he was really familiar with, as I think you said before, Kelly, with kind of like the coupons and the offers and all that kind of stuff that JCPenney runs on. But this does, of course, open up an opportunity for Ron to return to Apple and maybe reinvigorate the stores. Because the stores, I think, need it.
Theoretically, it does because...
Yeah, theoretically.
I'm going to disagree with Jeff, only because on paper it does, because Apple still hasn't hired anybody to replace Bralett. And it looks like Ron's got a lot of free time now because his resignation was effective immediately. That's the only reason that it is a possibility, is because Ron doesn't have a job and Apple has one open.
Okay. But Jeff's saying no because...
Okay. Likely, so, it's a whole other matter.
Yeah, okay. So technically, sure, Apple could hire him because Kelly's right. He's out of work and they have a job opening. The reality, though, I think, is that no, he's not coming back to Apple, and they probably like him. He left on good terms, it appears, and that's great. But where he is right now, he's in a perfect position to do exactly what he likes to do, which is to come in and completely redesign a retail system. That's what he did for Target. And when he was done and everything was running the way it needed to be, he left and went to Apple. He built their entire retail system when it was set up and running the way it needed to be done. Then for him, there's really nothing left to do. So he went on to JCPenney and tried to do his thing there, but they didn't let him. And so now he's out looking for something else. Or maybe he's just going to go on vacation for the rest of his life. He could do that.
Fritz in the chat room says Ron has decided to spend more time with his money.
Yes.
There's also a comment here that he can't return because he has no chin. There you go. Ron Johnson with no chin, allegedly. This man has no chin.
Well, maybe they should hire him under the American Disabilities Act.
There you go.
Chinless wonder.
to play devil's advocate, I guess, it wouldn't be the first time that someone in a leadership position from Apple left for a while, did something else, and then came back.
This is true.
Just going to put that out.
Float that out there.
Or even occasionally they come back before they've even left.
There's that too. Yes.
Yeah.
Now I reckon there's a huge tie-in with porn as well within Apple. Because I can't say Ron Johnson without thinking of Ron Jeremy. And I was on the verge of saying Ron Jeremy when I started this story. And
not surprised me to know that Ron Jeremy had been asked to leave at JCPenney's.
Well, could be true, yes. And the other thing is, I can't look at Scott Forstall without thinking huge cock, which is another porn tie-in, so we'll talk about him later. He's on as well, because iMessage is cocked up this week. So Ron's not coming back.
It's really unlikely. It's possible, but I think it's really unlikely. I think in reality, I agree with Jeff in that... it's entirely possible that there's something else that he wants to do. I mean, he revamped Target and then he built Apple Retail. And so he's probably looking for the next thing like that and not necessarily making successful Apple Retail more successful. He wants to take something that's maybe not doing so well and see what he can do to turn that around. And for the most part, his track record with that is pretty decent. So,
but I mean,
it's not like Apple Retail's floundering without anyone.
No.
Exactly.
We tick in along pretty neatly.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. But the only thing I was thinking was, and I've had this with the iOS 7 conversation we had the other week, there's nothing wrong with iOS as it currently stands. I'm not saying there is, but so many people have copied it that it doesn't stand head and shoulders above other things. So therefore, it might be ready for a revamp. And I look at the stores now, and everyone has copied the Apple model of you know, doing stuff on benches, keeping it very clean and crisp and away.
Yeah, but they haven't really copied the Apple model, because, you know, anyone can buy benches and anyone can make the store look clean. But you walk into like any of these stores with the lovely benches and all the people with the matching blue shirts that look just like the geniuses, and then you try and get some service and you realize that they really have only understood in the most superficial manner what it is that makes Apple retail great.
But I mean, I think, you see, I think as well that the other thing is that the Apple store model is kind of homogenized as well, because they, if you look at the start was very much about the clean sides, the products were on display, and then there was a little bit at the end that was a Genius Bar and a small accessories bit. And the trouble is, the accessories bit has expanded beyond belief. And if you go into places, you know, the Regent Street store, the Covent Garden store, the accessories sections are all placed away from the main stuff upstairs. But they're big expanses of the shop. They've taken away from what the original ethos was of the shop in the first place. So I think there's two things. I think a lot of people have copied what it looks like, which means it needs to change in my mind. And the other thing is, I think it's evolved, but it's not evolved with a structure in mind. It's just kind of, well, where should we put this stuff? Let's move the shop around and stick it over there. I think the stores are due a real big revamp.
But there wasn't, when they started, there wasn't a whole pile of accessories to sell.
No, exactly.
That's another valid point, is that there, you didn't need a wall for iPhone cases because there wasn't really an iPhone at that point.
I don't think they've evolved so much as just changed. Do you follow what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, who's got a dot matrix printer?
I feel like the accessory wall makes a certain amount of sense only because, like, an iPhone case isn't necessarily something. I mean, you want to be able to see them and touch them, and especially now that they've made it so you can check out within the app. If all you want to do is walk in and grab a case and leave, I think that's the kind of stuff that makes that wall useful, I guess, as far as Apple. Because even,
but that's my point, even, though.
What?
That's my point, is that the wall where that is not an experience. It's a place to put it. It's a point of sale. And that's what's happened.
Right.
The Apple Store has not evolved. It's not grown into something better through natural evolution and expanding of the shopping experience, which is what Jobs did originally with Johnson. What it is where should we put this? And that's not an experience. That's like running a corner store.
Yeah. But I think, aside from the accessory wall, which is the only thing I think has sort of evolved into being, I mean, they still do really well. If you go look at any sort of retail numbers, you will find that the square footage on the Apple Store, the sales per square foot at the Apple Store are approximately double what they are every place else. I think if that metric is still holding true, it's like twice what the next best store is doing at the mall, whatever the shopping center is. So.
Mm. Someone in the chat room has put down that Don did a few recordings, and it's Don Johnson, not Ron Johnson. So
we've derailed pretty effectively in the chat room.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Thunder Chicken has got some serious warmth. Thunder Chicken.
Cats.
No, it's Thunder Chicken, mate. Thunder Chicken accessories are on the increase this week. You've got G-Tech has released a whole pile of drives with Thunder Chicken attached. Cal Digit has come out with a dock with twin Thunderbolt ports on it, which are great. Finally, it's not an end point. You've actually got the ability to relay. And also Matrox have come out with Thunder Chicken accessories that gives you dual display outputs, so you can effectively run three screens by just going into a single splitter. And the other thing is that Thunder Chicken is supposedly getting a revamp that's going to include an upscale in its speed to 20 megabits a second from who the people? Intel. Excuse me. I drank too much Coke. I want to burp. Is Thunder Chicken going to make a comeback, or is it still, they just responded too late and this is too little too late?
Well, I think it's interestingly, because this week my colleague Ray, who was the subject of the Black Feathers pick from a few weeks ago, who's now back from the States and is back working things, is a local musician, Mac enthusiast, and client, Steve Winwood. Clunk is the name.
Oh, you name dropper.
He's just ripped everything out of his studio because the whole studio, his recording studio, is going in Thunderbolt only. So raided drives, Thunderbolt monitors, mixing Thunderbolt mixing desks, or everything.
Wait, is there really a Thunderbolt mixing desk? Because, I mean, I'm well aware that I'm probably not in the market for it, but...
It's a touch-sensitive desk. It's like all the dials and things of the old mixing desk gone, new mixing desk, glass sheet, touch-sensitive, Thunderbolt.
And it's all Thunderbolt?
Yeah.
Bugger me, that's pretty good. And also, as well, at NAB this week, there was the... Blackmagic announced a new 4K camera, which is $4,000, which is pretty cheap for a 4K camera, it has to be said. And that runs on Thunder Chicken as well. And it's got slide-in-out SSD drives that you can stick in it. So you can just take a 512 SSD, flash SSD, and shove it straight in there and start recording onto it in Apple ProRes or Camera Raw.
I would point out that at the point, having come back from an exciting week, my daughter's inspired to say, "Who is Steve Winwood?"
Well, that's
Wikipedia. It said, "Look, he used to be in a band with Eric Clapton," to which they replied,
"Who's Eric Clapton?" I can honestly say that I've got a pal who owns I might have said this before, but I've got a pal who owns a plumbing firm in London. They do response to SOS Chelsea, and Dave went and fixed Brian Adams' boiler. As in Brian Adams, Canadian Brian Adams.
And that's not code.
No, that's not code. It was actually Brian Adams. And he's in the back fixing his boiler. And I said, does he live anywhere cool? He said, yeah, he lives next to Eric Clapton. I said, how do you know that? He said, because while I was fixing his boiler, I looked out of his kitchen window and I saw Eric Clapton in the house next to him. You're joking. What was he doing? And he said, washing up. I was like, yeah, okay, he's normal. He wasn't sitting there, you know, strumming on a guitar constantly. Never mind. Normal people. They go for a poo in the morning like everyone else. No, it's Thunder Chicken. I mean, from what you've just said there straight away, Thunder Chicken's not dead. It really is on an increase maybe then. But, I mean, I think the lack of devices has been really disappointing in the last 12 months particularly.
Well, there's a couple problems with that lack of devices. The first one is that everyone wants to do their own interface for Thunderbolt or Thundercat or Thunder Chicken or Thunderpants. Did I get all of them? Yeah. Anyhow, so that makes it difficult for manufacturers to know what to do. And then the other problem is that we have, actually, that's a really big problem right there. But the other problem is that it turns out that building Thunderbolt Cat pants devices is a little more difficult than Intel and Apple led people to believe. So it's taking more time, it's taking more money, and that's scaring some people off. I have a feeling, though, that with the push that the media industry is making to 4K video, coupled with the fact that there's no other easily obtainable technology that gives people the level of throughput that the second generation of Thunderbolt offers, that's going to help push adoption at the high end, and then it'll start trickling down.
I mean, price is something else the chat room here is coming out with. Big Russ in the chat room saying the problem that he's got with it is not just the lack of devices, but the fact that the devices are out there are just too expensive.
Yeah, and well, price will come down eventually, but it turns out that it's a lot more expensive to make those devices than people realized. So they cost more, and we don't want to pay as much money.
Is that physical production or is that licensing?
I think it's physical production.
Right.
It's physical production.
Yeah, and when
there's chips in the cables.
Yes.
There's processing that happens in the cable to make that a possibility. So I think that's a piece of what, I think that's part of what kept there from being a whole lot of things when they first announced Thunderbolt in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the prices that we've got here, that thing from Matrox, which is effectively nothing more than a video splitter, admittedly, it's a 1-to-2 video splitter, but that's coming in at $160, which I would have said was perhaps slightly on the high end, but it's still not a horrific price. The Cowl Digit thing, which I think is very good, because a lot of these devices end up as dead ends. You get one Thunderbolt port and there's no relay, which you really do need, especially if you're talking about the video. And that's coming in at $199, which again is on the high end of acceptable, but not too bad. And G-Tech now, have pushed out that, drives. That they're coming out. They took 2 terabytes, $700.
Ouch.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, sorry, on the video splitter, excuse me, on the video splitter, if you think about what that does, to do the same thing without that, you would have to go and buy 2 video cards that support HD video out. And I haven't priced video cards like that lately, but I'm betting it costs at least as much as getting this one little box that connects to your Thunderbolt port and can still drive other things at the same time.
Yeah. And if it'll then relay as well.
Yeah.
No, that's a fair point. I hadn't thought of it that way. Windrider in the chat room has put in a comment as well and a link that says that Sonnet has announced a 15-port Echo Thunderbolt dock with built-in HD SSD optical drive options as well as...
And it'll cost about the same as your new Mac Pro.
So that's a couple of $1,000s. No, it's actually going to cost, with a 2 terabyte hard drive included, it's going to cost $500, which
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. And looking on the back here, it looks like it's got eSATA as well. Hmm. It's got USB 3, eSATA, 2 Thunderbolt ports, a FireWire 800, Ethernet port, and a power socket.
Now, see, this is one of the things that makes Thunderbolt so cool, because Thunderbolt itself is not the go through technology like USB or FireWire. Thunderbolt is like taking a PC card slot that's inside your computer and sticking it on the outside of your computer, so it can have anything connected to it, and something like this where you have lots of storage, a gajillion different types of ports on it, and it's all just in one little box. To me, that's part of the big promise of Thunderbolt, because I can take this tiny, tiny little plug and have all this stuff that's connected into it all at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think the problem that you've got is when you look at Thunderbolt, you see a cable and you see a device output from a port, and you think instantly, well, okay, if that says that's what it says it does, I want the other things to be able to do that, and I want them to cost as much as a VGA connector or a DVI connector. When actually, as you say, you know, you're not going to get the video card, you're not going to get the relaying, you're not going to get the quantity of data speed from those kind of things without adding extra things to that, and that adds to the price, which probably takes it beyond what Thunderbolt charges. I hadn't thought of it that way. It's a really good point, Jeff. See why you—that's why you're the managing editor or something, and I'm just an idiot.
Yeah, well, you're the guy that pulled the whole show together. I'm the guy that may or may not have clothes on.
Without you turning up, mate, barely. right, what's the other thing? iMessages went down this week, and also FaceTime. And this was to do with, I'm sure it's got nothing to do with the fact that it was built by Forsman. Not Forsman, he works for, he's something else now. He's a father as well. Forsman's a father. I meant to say.
In theory, you're correct. It doesn't have anything to do with
it. It doesn't have anything to do with Forsman.
Because Forsman didn't build it.
No.
He's been off building people.
Yeah, he's a daddy. He built a person. The thought of Forsman being a father just scares the crap out of me.
I thought he made that little grill that sits on your counter. Oh, no, wait, that's Foreman.
Forsman, Mr. Forsman, who used to come on the show, used to write for Ars Technica, but doesn't anymore, has had a little baby. I think it's a boy. Can't remember the name.
Yes, it is.
It's a boy. Congratulations to Chris. Well done, mate. Fine effort on your part. I'm sure your good lady's exhausted, but well done. No, but iMessages went down. Both users were said to be rather upset, but never
mind. I am some percent, I think, is how that goes.
Okay, the awesome thing is Kelly had to send me an SMS to see if I was the other person, and the answer was yes.
She says she's in on FaceTime now, but I didn't know that FaceTime actually linked to Skype, which is pretty impressive.
I didn't either.
Does it? Have you dialed me from FaceTime?
No.
Oh, okay. You dialed me on Skype.
Yeah, it calls my camera a FaceTime camera.
Oh, right. Okay, no. Okay, that's fair enough.
Maybe that's why it says that.
Why did it go out? Has anyone found out what the
outage was? I think maybe you could get a hamster replaced in time.
50p in the meter.
Yeah, see, I was thinking they forgot to drop another quarter in the meter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
good. There's a few questions in the chat room that relate to FaceTime, and they're not particularly friendly, or they're questioning what it is in the first place. I've used it once with Kyle in the Philippines over 3G, and it worked okay, and it was fine, but I've never used it since. So
It's a long-distance date tool, right?
Yeah. It's funny to me, the status updates, because the status is never, like, half of people or everybody. It always says some percentage of users are affected, and that always cracks me up.
And in reality, what they could do is say Jeff and Kelly and maybe a couple other people are affected.
Is FaceTime still being used, says Adam? Yes.
No. Yeah.
Well, it's still available.
Well, okay. FaceTime is occasionally used. Most people, I think, are using... I think, honestly, the people who are using it are the people who were using iChat.
Oh, that's it. Kelly's gone then.
Yeah, it's because she was talking bad about FaceTime. Yeah. So the Apple cops cut her line.
Yeah, is it, you're bitching about our FaceTime camera, woman.
Yeah. Gone. All right, so I will carry on with a little bit of what she was saying.
Kelly, you got cut off there. We got none of that. And so whatever you said, it's lost. It's in the ether, mate. In your FaceTime ether. Hello?
Hello,
can you hear me? Oh, you're there. We got you back now. That's all right. I thought we'd lost you. DHM, you said something there.
My mum uses FaceTime.
Really?
Yeah.
Who with?
Me.
All right. So that's you're the two users then.
Yeah, it's great.
The only thing she hasn't got the hang of is the fact that the picture-in-picture shows her what the camera's looking at. So we can hear her and we can see the ceiling of her house. Occasionally we get the very top of my dad's head.
Yeah.
But that's not an issue reserved solely for FaceTime. That is a Skype issue as well as.
It's a video chat issue, yeah.
Yeah.
Nostril cam.
But it's... No, I mean, I think that if as a service, if my mum can use it, then it's faster anyone can use it, Tess.
Carl's,
she doesn't use it a lot, to be fair, but she does use it.
Carl's in the chat room. He says, my stepdad uses FaceTime to talk to his daughter, and he's even worked out how to use the earphones now. Totally good, mate. I don't know if you're available, Carl, but do dial in if you feel like it.
I think a lot of people who are using FaceTime are iPad users who maybe didn't have a computer with a camera on it before, or don't use a computer very much at all, and like their main computer is an iPad. I think those folks are probably testing out FaceTime. My mother-in-law got an iPad for Christmas. And she uses FaceTime to talk to the family in Alaska, her daughter and her daughter's family that's all up there. So I think a lot of people who are using it are not power users, which I don't mean in any sort of derogatory fashion, but it's people who are like somebody's mom, somebody's friend, somebody's family member who wants to talk to their other family member. I think that's who most of the people are using it.
You've got an iPad, you've got FaceTime, you have to actively go and get Skype. Which my mum's never going to do. So, it's there. And we know that, my brother's got an iPad, my sister's got an iPad, I've got an iPad. So it's there, it's built in. So it's kind of like a forced feeding. It's like making pate. It's the pate of audio video.
Well, it tastes really good, but it's no good for you.
It's no good for you, but it keeps ramming it down your throat.
Fritz in the chat room said he used it last week when he made a call from the USA to Costa Rica, but we won't be able to talk about that, I fancy. And also, who put this in the comment that I need to read out? I forgot. Paul says it lacks the roulette feature.
Roulette feature.
And we're back to porn. There we go. See?
Yeah, chat roulette. The reason why iPhones have a wiped, clean front.
Does chat roulette work on the iPhone? Oh, right.
I'm fairly certain it's not going to get approved as an app.
I know what I'm doing on my day off next week. Allegedly, Wi-Fi 802 2.11 AC is coming on the new Macs. Whenever they're going to be, who knows? Is this plausible? Is it as a rumor? And what does AC give us over N?
It's faster.
It's faster and more penetrative.
Yeah, it gets the job done.
Are you saying you don't actually know, do you, Jim?
No.
No, okay. Good
it
man.
Is faster. It's I didn't know that.
It's definitely faster. Oh man, we're up to the very best of this, definitely.
What was that Apple guy saying is about us being not current?
At 1.3 gigabits per second is allegedly the what AC gives you.
Yes, it's kind of, I guess it's like having Ethernet but wireless until it doesn't work.
The first AC router arrived last year in the shape of the Netgear R6300 router. But so far, it's not been adopted by much else. Everyone's been sticking with the N series.
All right, so I'm having a hard time keeping up with all the different Wi-Fi variants. Is the C, is that the one that gives you the wide area Wi-Fi where you could essentially have like a town that's blanketed with a Wi-Fi signal? Or am I mixing that up?
WiMAX. Is that what you're saying? Because I don't know what WiMAX is. I've never got on with that.
So WiMAX is what they install in town centres.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's not C grade.
Okay.
I've not heard of C. I've heard of B, G, N, the new one, and WiMAX. That's all I've come across.
Well, the graphic that I got, which is from the people that authenticate it, I'm guessing, is A, B, G, N, and AC. And according to this, N at the moment gives 450 megabits per second at peak speed with three antennas. but the new one will give speeds of up to 1.3 gigabits per second. So it'll be three times as fast, effectively.
I went to a house this week to read you stuff, and the guy, he was trying to work out why his wireless signal was very poor, and we found right in the corner of his office was one of the old pyramid shaped Wi-Fi base stations.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Oh, the flying saucers?
Yeah, one of those, still chugging away. We whipped that out straight away.
Falling back to that well tried and trusted method of researching using Wikipedia, thanks for the link in the chat room. Wireless computing standard of 82 is currently under development, draft 5.0, providing high throughput wireless local area networks on the 5 gigahertz band. Standard finalization is to be late 2012, with the working group approval being achieved in early 2014. According to a study, devices with the AC specification are expected to be common by 2015. And an estimated 1 billion spread around the world. So if Apple have got this, they're ahead of the curve on what the
roadmap's showing. Well, Apple's always been ahead of the curve on Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So good if it comes, eh? But I can't see what's wrong with N, to be honest. I get video down through N around the house, and it's beautiful.
What's going to happen when you start getting higher and higher resolution video? You're going to need a bigger pipe.
Yeah, but I think the problem is at the moment that as far, certainly far as the UK is concerned, the pipe problem is the outer pipe, not the inner pipe. It's not going to be from the router onwards. It's going to be to the door is the problem. Because at the moment, there's no way on God's green earth. I mean, even with 120 megabits per second, allegedly on the speed, theoretically, I could stream a 4K movie at 120 megabits a second into the door. But the problem I've got is the site that's sending it isn't going to be able to do that.
It can't send it fast enough.
Exactly. I can receive it fast enough, but it isn't going to be pushing it out that far. And then you go to peak periods around here, you know, I get a small drop off on speed, but if you're on the next village along, you're talking about dropping from speeds at 20 megabits a second. The local exchange will do 1 megabit a second. They can't even stream 720 HD, let alone start thinking about 4K. The world is not ready for 4K, not by a long stretch.
Oh, no. And most people don't even realize that 4K, unless you have a television that's 80 inches, you can't see the quality.
Yeah, no. I did use your quote, actually, on on Tech News Today on Monday said when I said that. I didn't credit you with it, however.
What the hell?
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I did say I'd heard. I just didn't say who it was from.
Oh, that's the same thing as crediting me.
Okay. So there you go. AC might come, might not. Who knows? There's been a patent application from Apple that's been approved, and I don't suppose you can read too much into this, that there will be a Mac pad that will be detachable from a keyboard. So it's kind of like the Tough Bookie, take it out, spin it round, turn it down, make it into a tablet, turn it back into a computer. I think this is fairly spurious. Someone's had an idea. I think they thought they should patent it just in case, but I never see Apple making anything like this.
Now, it would be cool, and if they do make it, they have something in mind that we're not getting yet. I mean, like, we're not wrapping our heads around what it is yet. But something like this looks to me more like a patent to protect their ideas and really keep other people from building a Mac-like tablet-laptop combo.
Adam in the chat room says, please let this Mac thing be real and happen. I'd love that. It would be perfect for something like the 11-inch Air, which is, you know, the 11 to 13-inch models are probably the ones that would lend themselves to this. You can't do this with 15 and 17. 17 not being in existence anymore, but I can't see this actually ever coming to fruition. They're too locked into making the iPad into the experience that you want rather than turning the Mac platform into an iPad more than a separated computer and tablet. Any thoughts? No?
It already exists in the HP universe, doesn't it? HP make a laptop that you can hoik the screen off, which turns it into a tablet.
Yeah. No, it does. And that's out there at the moment. There's a couple of them. The Modbook as well, they're pointing out in the chat room, is of a similar ilk.
Yeah, it would seem a little late to be patenting that. Then.
There must be something specific within the patent that references something else that's not covered. So,
you know, there's something that Apple and other companies do, which is patent a specific type of a specific whatever it is, and they show it in the patent used in a different way. So we look at whatever they're showing us in the patent, and in this case we think, oh, it's a laptop and a tablet that you can pop apart. But it may actually be that what they're patenting is, or what they really want are some of the individual little bits that are in that patent, and they put it together this way, and it kind of obfuscates what they really want to do with it.
Connectors for power and information is what Bank Wench is saying. They probably want out of that pattern. So it's the connection methods of those two things rather than the fact that the thing's going to be there.
Yeah.
Never mind. HBO have released an update to their iOS application. You can now get HBO Go. But the difference is it does everything that it normally did before, but now it allows AirPlay streaming. They've always shied away from this, and Sky TV have got the Sky Go application, which is a fantastic application, but it blocks AirPlay. You can't stream what you've got to the TV. I think this is brilliant move by HBO. I mean, A, they've got fantastic programming anyway. If they were over here in the UK, I'd have this application in a heartbeat. And the fact that you can now stream it to your TV, I think it's an essential off your iPad. And Sky Go, if you're listening, for God's sake, get it on. Americans in the chat room, talk us through HBO Go and whether this is really cool, because I think it is.
I think it's partly cool because you can stream off your iPad, but I think the reason that I personally am not excited about it, there are two reasons. The first of which is I'm currently not an HBO subscriber. I want to be. I want them to make an in-app purchase, and so I email them or call them about once a month and say, hey, I really want to hand you money. So I don't end up having to, watch Game of Thrones through other methods. I really want to subscribe to you, but I don't want to have to give Comcast any of that money. So when HBO was kicking around the idea of becoming a service that an internet provider could give you as well, you know, outside of a TV subscription, that sounds way more appealing to me than this, because if you are an HBO Go user, you are an HBO subscriber. So you can already watch this stuff on your TV already. So I get that there's a bonus utility that now you can AirPlay it from your iPad to wherever you are. It doesn't matter where you're at. But to me, it's only sort of mildly useful because, like I said, if you're already subscribing in order to get access to everything in the app, then you can already watch that on the big TV.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really would like to be able super to take... Cool. Yeah, no, I mean, I spend a lot of time working a little workshop where I've got a little TV in there, and I'd love to be able to flick it over off my iPad instead of watching it on the iPad mm-hmm. all the time. And you've also then got to carry an extra charger around with the iPad, whereas if you flick it off, at least the screen can go dead and save your battery a little bit.
I'm all for it. It's the kind of thing where it seems like maybe content providers are seeing an ounce, or at least using... an ounce of common sense in order to go, you know, people are already subscribing to our service, so they're already watching it on a big TV. We should give them the opportunity to continue to watch it on a big TV. And I really feel like this is one of the few occasions where the content providers have done the smart thing. And the reason I say that is because in the US anyway, the Amazon Video app will allow you to AirPlay audio, but not video. From Amazon Video. And the reason for that, according to Amazon, is that the content providers have said, if you are getting it on Amazon Video, then you can't watch it on the big TV.
Which I absolutely believe as well.
I think that's ridiculous. And so to see that there's been some glimmer of common sense that has been applied to a situation involving audio or video that has been commercially produced always makes me very happy. So I don't want people to think I'm like hating on HBO Go or anything. The only thing I don't like about HBO Go right now is that they won't let me subscribe to it directly without giving Comcast another truckload of money so that I have a cable package that is actually eligible to add HBO to, because I would do it in a heartbeat if they would let me do it without having to pay a bunch more money for a bunch of TV that I don't watch.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be lovely.
But it, I mean, obviously, over here in the UK, where we've got the BBC iPlayer app, which is the streaming, you know, media. I think, and that's still audio only to AirPlay, which is just really, really annoying. I would just so like to just fire up the iPlayer and ping it off to the television, and you know, it's just a nonsense that that isn't available.
Well, there's points in the chat room here. The first one from Sachs says that Sky Go's effort is a mighty pain in the arse. And Batwench has joined in appealing with that. I don't have a problem using the interface. I think it works just fine. I get great content. It occasionally blips out and says it's lost the feed, but you just restart it and it goes again. The other thing is that Sachs has made a good point. Sky is probably going to be prevented from doing it in the UK, probably by conditions that they've got from the content providers. So they buy in a show that they then stream out on the TV, and maybe there's a condition within the content provision, which is what Kelly was saying here, that's saying you can't do that. And again, with iPlayer, you look at what the BBC produce, in inverted commas, they don't produce anything that's BBC-owned content, I don't think, much anymore, apart from some of the natural history.
Sure. I mean, the BBC, if anyone has the muscle to turn around to their suppliers and say, oh, and this includes streaming rights, then, you know...
Yeah, but I mean, what's the gestation on a TV show? You're probably talking something like 2 years from when it's actually filmed to the point that it then gets released on the BBC, especially if it's an American piece of stuff. They get it way late. So maybe the content agreement at the start was done and dusted. Maybe we'll see it in the next 12 months start to change. But I mean, HBO are probably, all of that content on the HBO Go app is HBO generated and owned. Therefore, they can do what they damn well like with it, which Sachs is saying in the chat room they probably can't, which is a good point. Good point. That's all the stories. We've gone through all those stories. Oh, Chrome for iOS. Sorry, the last one. Chrome for iOS has got an update. If you don't use this, it's brilliant because there's an awful lot of Flash-based stuff which will work. Video doesn't work. You have to use the Proton browser for that. But there's an awful lot of stuff that does work. But they've allowed now full-screen browsing. Does anyone use Chrome on their iOS device? I do.
No. I'm not a Google app fan.
Right. Okay. So it's just a Google thing rather than a.
Yeah. Well, and the Chrome interface doesn't do much for me. I do have it installed on my Mac, but yeah,
it's my default browser of choice. Photon, not Proton, says Windrider. Thanks, mate. Do apologize. Kelly, no, don't use it.
I don't use it on iOS. I have Chrome installed on my laptop. Specifically because that way I don't have to install Flash on anything else. So that's why I use it.
Yeah. THM?
I'm Safari on everything. I've got Chrome on the Mac, but for some reason it just leaves me cold.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, there's nothing against it, and I don't have any issues with Google and whatever using it. I just, if Safari had any obvious faults, then I'd probably switch. But I think, you know, back in the beginning of Safari, when it was Safari 1, and it was a bit choppy and a bit all over the place and stuff, then Firefox was there to pick up the slack. But I can't really see, there's nothing that Safari does badly enough to make me want to change out of it. And there's just the quirks in Chrome don't necessarily appeal enough to make me change. And does anyone still use Firefox?
People do.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Not real people.
I hear cows are very...
real people do. I think that's, you know...
Yeah.
My affectionate term for them is muggles. People at large, they tend to... From what I have seen, if they're not using Safari, they're probably using Firefox. I think
there's no Firefox for iOS, though.
No. I'm talking about on the Mac. I think what it is that a lot of people inertially have switched to Firefox ages ago when Safari came out and IE was taken out back in old Yellard. I think that was the point when people went, well, Safari isn't good. It's just not quite as bad as IE. And so a lot of people were on Safari until Firefox for the Mac came out. And once it was released, people sort of paid attention to it because it was faster. It was extensible because remember for a long time, there was no official way to add an extension to Safari to get any sort of additional functionality out of it. So a lot of people went to Firefox and I think have just stayed there or at some point rage quit Firefox and installed Chrome and have sort of stayed there. So I don't think there's a lot of people who are sort of rotating through browsers on a regular basis. The only thing I think is that there's been a certain amount of discontent with Safari. A lot of people's knee-jerk reaction is that they don't like it. My knee-jerk reaction is that I don't like Safari because I commonly have more than two tabs open at a time. And if that's the case, it tends to give Safari a seizure. So,
right.
So that's what I have discovered is because I have a number of tabs open, whatever that number is, as soon as it becomes plural, it tends to make Safari really twitchy. And so I don't generally prefer Safari, but that's just me.
Okay. I mean, there's a point in the chat room here from Sack saying that he uses Firefox only on his Mac so that he just accesses Facebook with it because he can control the usage data they get more accurately through it. So they can't get it.
Yeah.
Good thinking.
Well, that's clever. Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. Like that. That's top of the shop now already. Very good. We've got a competition for you. Yes. You could win a copy of a fantastic application that I've just got the picture for and I can't freaking find it now. Oh, I was
going to do interpretive dance.
I was going to I was going to be so slick there. And bollocks.
Yes. See, Kelly did the interpretive dance. That app.
Teleport has now kicked and I've closed my screen down with my hot corner. It's all gone belly up here.
Oh, no.
That'll go down well on the.
It's a feed. Big belly to go up as well. Right. Here we go. I have a free copy of FX Photo Studio Pro to give away for your Mac. There you go. It's from the Mac Fun team. Mac as in M-A-C and fun as in P-H-U-N, not F-U-N. But I've got a free copy of it. And it's also thanks to Mac Jim, the guy that does the docs for the shows. He's got an extra copy and he contacted Mac Fun and said, why don't you let me give it away on the show? And they said, yeah, that'd be great. It's a whole load of features available for your Mac device that'll let you put your photos in. You can apply tint filters. There's adjustments. There's enhancement tools in there as well. It's fully featured and it's great. It's a lovely application. I think it's about £13 or something like that. $15, $18. So it's not a cheap application and it's very versatile. If you'd like a copy of this, then all you have to do is tell me where Laycock Abbey is. Now, Laycock Abbey is significant in photography because it's where Mr. Fox Talbot took the first thought of negative. And that's a picture of Laycock Abbey windows that he took, and it's the oldest existing negative that is known about. So, where is Laycock Abbey? And all you have to do is send in your answer to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and we'll draw it out next week, and we'll give you a free copy of FX Photo Studio Pro, thanks to Mac Jim, kind bloke that he is, and the fantastic MacFun team. So there you go. Where is Laycock Abbey? And you could win that copy of the software.
I would like to point out to the chat room that my answer is incorrect. Please do not use that as an actual entry.
Is it next door to Downton Abbey? You should have said that. No.
That's what I said.
Downton Abbey doesn't exist. That's actually, is that Eva Castle?
It's a castle. Well, no,
it's,
I know.
It's
Wait, Downton Abbey doesn't exist?
No, funny enough, it's not.
The location for a show I've never seen.
No, the actual place real. That they film it at exists, and I think it's Hever Castle, which is where Anne Boleyn was her family were from before they all got decimated. But
good times.
Yeah, but there you go. This podcast and all of this is brought to you by UK2.net, this historical and informative podcast. I probably got right. I made that up, by the way. If you want to support the British Tech Network, then you need to support UK2 because they're absolutely brilliant. They look after all of the bandwidth costs that we get on the show, and it's a lot for this and all the other shows that we push out. We put 8 shows a week out. They pick it all up, never say a word, and they give fantastic deals back to you guys. It's a great symbiotic relationship. You go and buy all your web stuff from UK2. They keep giving us loads of free bandwidth, and they give you reductions back on all the things that you've bought from them as well. So go and use the click through on our webpage at britishtechnetwork.com from the sponsors page, and then come back to the sponsors page. There's a whole pile of offer codes in there, and UK2 will support you. They will give you funds back against what you purchase from them. And you guys are buying lots of stuff from them, so thank you very much to you for supporting UK2, because they support us, and it in nature means that you've got to support our sponsors. Thank you very much to them. Right, there's something else coming up which is fantastically good and important. It's the British Tech Bash. Yes, it'll be here Saturday the 6th of July. It's in the B46 area of Birmingham. If you want to get a hotel, just get anything in B36, B46, within sort of 3-mile radius. There is the bash on Saturday. Now, that's going to be kids friendly, so there's loads of kids coming. I know there's at least 12 coming so far, so don't let that put you off, but there'll be loads of places for them to play. The area that we got is big enough for 300 people. I think we're probably going to get in the region of about 100 to 150 people tops. We've sold 40 odd tickets already, so that's brilliant news. But if you need your ticket, it's £20 per person. That's not an entry fee. That is your contribution towards the cost of the day. And if everybody pays 20 quid ahead, then it means we can feed everyone and beer everyone up free of charge, and there's nothing else to pay. If you want to bring your own dietary requirement-y stuff, that's fine. And if you need to bring your own beers and have a few of the and share them around, if you want to bring some to try with a few of the people that you know from that week, that's fine as well. You can always bring more. But 20 quid will get you through the door, will guarantee you some grub, and will guarantee you some ale. Now then, if you want to buy one, go to britishtechnetwork.com and click on the banner that says Pay Now for the British Tech Network Bash, and that's on the Saturday. There's loads of hotels spare around. I know the one over the road is full now, so that's an indication of how popular it is. But if you'd like to come for a curry the night before, then underneath that banner, there's another banner that says Curry Deposit £10. And all that is you giving me £10 so that I can reserve your table over at the Kismet restaurant over the road, which is the best curry house in the world. Paul Kirkle went there last week with me, and he agrees now. And at the end of the night, instead of getting a free curry for tenner, which is not what you're getting, you're going to get £10 off your bill. So we'll all be sat in tables of fours and sixes and that kind of stuff. Providing you bring your ticket with you, you'll get £10 off your bill. So that's 4 people at a table, £40 off, 6 people at a table, £60 off the bill. And then you split it up amongst yourselves from that point forward. But that's on the 5th. Friday the 5th at 9 p.m. is the curry. Stay over. Saturday the 6th of July, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, is the bash. And we'll go through. And at 10 o'clock at night, we've got to be out of the facility. So we'll have to have had some fun. But we're going to do all the shows there. The gamer show is going to be there. Chiz, who absolutely romped the Christmas quiz during the gamer show. If you haven't listened to the episode, have a scroll back through their archive and have a listen. It's a brilliant episode. He is going to come down, and he is going to take the rest of the British Tech Network on in a game or show quiz hosted by Paul. It'll be Chiz versus the world. There you go. And that'll be broadcast live. We'll do all the shows from the Bash, and they'll all be broadcast live. We won't be doing any dial-ins, unfortunately. No overseas guests. It's just going to be the people that are there who are going to take part. So all the shows, though, will be broadcast out, providing the internet doesn't crap out, which it may. But we're going to get to all the dongles and time together and have a super dongle. Andy Lee reckons he's on with that.
So. A super dongle. That is code, isn't it?
No, that's not code. It's going to be all the dongles tied together to give maximum coverage so that we can broadcast audio and video without seamlessly, I would say. British Tech Bash, Friday the 5th for the curry, Saturday the 6th for the Bash. Buy your ticket now, and then I can reserve caterers and that kind of stuff, because if I can't do an extra 100 people in the last 2 weeks up to the Bash, I'm going to have to book 450, 400, 450 and so on. So please at least let me know that you come in via the ticketing system if you possibly can. And I'm sending tickets out this week as well, so you should get your ticket back if you've bought one. So it's just not fake. It really is real. There'll be a ticket. There'll be a barcode. You'll be fine. Right. Have we got any cool things? Would you like to start us off, Jeff? I mean, we've pounced on you a little bit here. Have you got anything that's Mac and cool that you can think of off the top of your head?
Can I give you iPad and cool instead?
Hmm.
Since the amount of time I had to prepare was going and finding the microphone to plug into this computer. So I'm going to break the rules. I'm going to go with iPad. So if you're an iPad user and you like keeping track of all the stuff that you need to see all the time, go and buy Status Board. It's brand new from Panic Software. And
we like
it's,
Panic.
Yeah. And it is stunningly cool. So it creates a status board out of your iPad. And then you can take your email and stock quotes and the weather and your social network feeds and all of this data that you're gathering from the internet anyhow, and then you can display it in your on your iPad screen all at the same time, and it's customizable, so you can build pretty much just through HTML, your own modules that plug into this. And so you can be feeding data from spreadsheets and getting real-time information about, say, like web traffic to your site. And it's just all in this one beautiful, easily customizable interface. And that's Status Board. And it is $9.99. So that's US dollars. Yeah, so I'm sure that the conversion to British pounds makes it like £3 for you guys or something, because
£6-ish, £6.50.
Oh, so not like £1.50. That, you know, because the pounds were so much more.
Good, nice pick. I'm intrigued how it gets all the data in from different sources, because you're saying it takes it from different document types.
Well, the modules. They go out and cull data from all the different sources that are going to feed that into you. Mm. So the way I understand it, it's like having a bunch of HTML based modules that fit together and are just pulling the sources for information and then rendering it out in a very pretty interface for you.
It cool. feels a bit like Dashboard, when we got Dashboard on Tiger.
A bit like that.
It feels a bit like that in that there's a certain amount of stuff that's prefabbed that you can just go and get. And then there's ways that you can build other pieces so that you're customizing what you're seeing on that screen to be whatever you want it to be. And the thing to me that's cool about it is Panic City Town and seeing the evolution of this, because they had a blog post quite a while ago about we've built this status board in our office and we've got this big TV and we turned it vertically and it's got a bunch of different information on it for people. Here's how far we are on this project. Here's how far we are on that project. Here's what the weather's like right now. Here's the transit information for the front of the building, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of people were like, I want that in my house too. And so now it's really cool that they've put this out for everyone to use. And there's already, I've seen a couple of places where people have started linking to, here's an awesome thing that this person built that you can use in status board.
Cool.
And I think it's pretty neat to see. This is one of those things that I like, because really what Panic has built here is not necessarily an app. It's a framework, and you can hang on that framework, whatever you want to hang on it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So I'm really interested to see where this is going to go, how it's going to turn out. I think it's going to be fab, but I really want to know if there's a way that I kind of want to just kick back and see in like a month or maybe 2 months, who has sat down with this and taken a good look and said, here's the itch that status board can scratch for me. I'm going to build it so that it will whatever. Yeah. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch, because a lot of people really like Panic. Panic makes really solid stuff. Those guys are lovely. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see what, because they tend to make things that are not necessarily for the non-technical user. Like, this is going to take a certain amount of know-how in order to get it to do what you want it to do. And, you know, just like Coda is for code views and, you know, high-powered text editor, that kind of thing. It's going to be a lot of fun to see how nerds look at this and go, you know, this is the thing that I want on this little secondary screen. I'm going to put my iPad on a stand over here, and I want to be able to tell blah. And watching evolution for me is going to be really, really fun, because those are the kind of things I really like.
Cool. Thank you very much. Good Pixar. Thank you. Chat room. Mark in the chat room has said, BBC iPlayer can be streamed via AirPlay. Open iPlayer, select the program. Before you hit play, bring up the recently used app tray, scroll all the way over to the left and select Apple TV. Return to the iPlayer app and hit play, and it works flawlessly. So there you go. Like
just system mirroring, not app, the app.
That might be cool.
Use the AirPlay.
I don't think mirroring works, but I've tried mirroring on the SkyGo app and it doesn't work. But if it works in the iPlayer, then brilliant. Well done, Mark. I'm going to try it with Go and see if it works, and we'll feed back. There we go. And then Batwitch started to talk to him in Welsh, and he's not Welsh, so that didn't work. Kelly, what do you have for us, girl?
My pick for today is related to the big pick last week. I think it was Adam, or whenever it was, that Adam picked Untappd.
Mm-hmm.
There's another app that is a similar app that is for more than just beer. It's beer and cocktails, which is why I prefer it. And it's called Elixir, and it's E-L-I-X-R, because Web 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
And it does the same sort of thing. You can feed it your location, tell what drinks there are. You know, you can check in someplace, see what other people are drinking there, et cetera, et cetera. It's another sort of cocktail. It's another sort of drinking social network, but it's cocktails and beer and not just beer. So if you want to follow me on Untappd, I'm more than happy to follow you, but you're not going to get a lot of activity from me there because I don't drink a lot of beer.
Okay. So there you go. Excellent.
And Elixir is free.
Free. We like free. Good girl.
And I like the little icon because it's got a little, you probably can't see it, but it's a white background with a martini olive on it.
There you go. A martini olive in choppy vision. Superb.
Ooh.
DHM, what do you have for us?
Well, I can concur with the sort of Panic as a fantastic company. And they've made... I've been using Transmit, which they make as well, for ages. And if FTP can be sexy, then it is. I mean, it's not, but it nearly is. But it's really awesome.
No one will come closer to making it sexy than Panic.
Yes, it's as close as it's physically possible to get to making FTP sexy without it.
And that's saying a lot.
Because it's still FTP, yeah.
Yes. But anyway, my pick's quite expensive.
Oh, blimey.
Used a little Drobo Mini, which is lovely.
Does it take 2.5 drives then, or?
Yes, four of them.
What?
This could be expensive.
Wow.
Go on then, take us through it.
Thunderbolt 2. So it's like really cool because it's a Thunderbolt thing. Anyway, Drobo Mini, is like most Drobos, it's a wee bit expensive, but it's four... 2.5-inch drive, so you have 4 terabytes of storage, which is 3 terabytes of portable RAID storage with a Thunderbolt connector. and an mSATA SSD card that fits in the bottom, which allows you to basically, it's like a, I guess in some ways it's like a Fusion drive, that it puts, you know, frequently accessed data on the SSD, which means that you read SSD speed to and from the drive over Thunderbolt for recently used data.
The chat room suggesting I've just orgasmed, which now I'm actually sighing at the problem that I'm probably going to be a few hundred quid lighter at the end of this podcast. It sounds great, dear Jim. Have you bought it?
I haven't bought one. I've seen one, and it's gorgeous.
You've had a play.
And a lot of my clients have got the bigger Drobos, which are great, but they always like, they feel just, you know, it's like a little bit tinny. Tack, tack, tack. And also, you know, a few of them have gone west. High hopes on this one, that the build quality is a lot higher.
Yeah, I got my money back from Drobo on the one that I bought from them. It was crap. That was a version one Drobo, admittedly. I've never been back since.
They've certainly got, I mean, in my experience of clients with big boy Drobos, you know, I haven't had anyone have a Drobo failure for a few years now. When people first started getting them, it was like, it came out of the box failed.
I lost loads of photos with mine.
And then you have to explain to people the difference between RAID and backup. Yes, it's not backup. Yes, if one drive fails, you can carry on and put another drive in. But if the whole thing goes west, then the whole thing indeed goes west. But this is a fantastic way of the portable one. I mean, it's very just a way of taking large amounts of storage around with you.
Yeah, good. I mean, you can get 1 terabyte SSDs now at 15 millimeters, but you're kind of stuck at the 750 mark, aren't you, for 9.5 drives? So
that's Samsung make a 9.5.
You can get I meant to say 2 terabytes at 15 millimeters.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but 9.5, you're stuck at one, aren't you?
One, yes.
Pretty much. My fault. Drobo Mini, $649 with no drives in it. And USB 3 connectivity and Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt's pretty cool with it, you have to admit, though. You have to admit. That's the thing. Pretty good, yeah.
It's coming. Thunderbolt's the coming thing.
My cool thing is something that's not exactly new. It's been around a long time, an awful long time, in fact, and I've been using it for ages. But doing the photo show this afternoon, someone asked the question where I ended up talking about backup, and the chat room said, what do you do for backup? And I said, well, I use ChronoSync. And I love ChronoSync for some reason. It's one of those things, you know, when you just kind of get an interface where you kind of go, I get this, it's easy to operate, I can schedule stuff with it, I can do save as, I can move the profile files across from computer to computer. And the beauty of ChronoSync is, A, it's very thorough and it does a good solid job of backing up. I haven't lost any data with ChronoSync ever. I'll probably lose it now, but never mind. But I've got two drives on my desk, 2 4-terabyte MyBooks. And basically, I come home from a shoot, whether it's video or photo, and I take all of the images and I dump them onto MyBook One. And then they're on the cards as well, so I've still got them in two places. And then, during the night, my laptop wakes up at 3 a.m. and it does a cross comparison of Drive 1 and Drive 2, and it makes sure that they look the same. And then ChronoSync shuts itself down. You can schedule stuff on there. You can individually tailor your backups with passwords as well. If you've got the agent software, which is only an extra $10, you can put it on other computers around the house and it'll create an agent instantly that will allow it to sync without a password actively being put in. And it's about $40, I think, when I bought it. And I don't think it's changed. But when you buy ChronoSync, the other thing that's pretty cool is you buy ChronoSync for life. You get that version of ChronoSync will work forever. Doesn't matter. And every time they upgrade it, you get the latest version, the latest version, the latest version. You never have to buy again. So cool for them. And I like it. And it just made me remind me that it's a good one. But like I say, it's nothing new. If you want some backup stuff, ChronoSync's cool.
I know several people that are using ChronoSync and they love it.
I think the thing with it is it's not rocket science to work out the interface and to do the scheduling. And you just click the spots on the calendar of when you want it to upgrade, and it's the update rather, and it just does it. So wakes itself up and off you go. ChronoSync, available from Econ Technologies. I'll put the link in the show notes. So there we go. We're done. Where can we get a hold of you? Jeff Gamet, thank you so much for stepping in, mate. The last second. I mean, literally the last second.
Oh, I'm glad to help. So you can find me at MacObserver.com. I'm the managing editor over there. So please go read all of the awesome things our writers are cranking out every day. You can find me on Twitter and on app.net. My name at both places is Jay Gamut. And if you want to see what's going on in the coffee shops that I hang out at, and believe me, there's some really stupid things that happen there, go to freshbrewedtales.com.
Excellent, mate. Sorry about the big show last night. Just unavoidable.
Oh, it's all good. We'll do it this afternoon.
We're doing
it.
We are.
Tonight.
Yes, 8 p.m. We're back with the big show this evening. We're going to do what we should have done last night. So there we go. Kelly, where are you, Mrs.?
You can find me on the Tiwa Talkcast on Sunday evenings, my time, at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. That's right. Yeah. Time zones.
The beauty of podcasts is they can rewind to find out what time you said there. Yeah.
That's true. You can also occasionally find me on Angry Mac Bastards, and you can find me on tuaw.com and on Twitter and app.net as Verso.
Excellent. I've been on app.next this week, which I haven't been on for a while. So
I know.
I'm trying hard. Trying hard. And Dr. Happy Mac, where are you, sir? On mute. You're still on mute. There we go.
I've been coughing away like a freaking trooper here, so I've been on mute most of the time. Yeah, and at Dr. Happy Mac on the Twitters, at Dr. Happy Mac on the app.net, and when something new comes along, which means I have to be at Dr. Happy Mac on something else, I'll be that as well.
Excellent, because no one's going to take Dr. Happy Mac, are they?
I am nothing if not brand.
No one puts DHM in the corner. we'll be back to normal next week. Greeny will be back hopefully over his man flu. Don will be back because he'll be caught up with his work, and Carl won't be stuck on the M25. Have a great weekend. See you next week.